101 on a Tuesday. Forgot it was Big Band Tuesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. 7 o'clock means we're in hour two of the program. Hour two is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them, 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net.
So prior to the break, Jason threw something out to the listeners. It's what we call listener engagement in the radio industry.
A tease.
Buzzword. Buzzword. Yeah. You're always pushing the envelope, Jason. So we asked the listeners, what's the hook? What's the draw for this Stanley Cup final? In case you missed it, the Vegas Golden Knights booked their ticket to the Stanley Cup final last night. 6-0 win in Dallas over the Stars in Game 6. So it's now Vegas and Florida in June for the Stanley Cup. Someone texted, and I believe it was Scott, more like the Swassley Cup. Think about it. You got dry heat. You got wet heat. No matter what kind of heat. It's going to be sweaty. You're just staring at me, Andy.
No, I'm still working it through. I mean, yeah, I get it. It's good.
I feel like you've experienced swass once or twice in your life.
Yeah. I don't know if he has.
Swass?
Yeah.
I've had some swass.
Okay.
There's been a bit of swass.
Dealt with some swass.
Yeah. Where do you deal with the worst of it? On the golf course? Walking?
I think I'm in the area of the body. I'm like, I think you know where.
Yeah. Is that a problem in soccer?
Not for me. I'm a goalie.
Right.
don't
move around
much. Standing, right?
Anyway, we don't need to talk about this.
Yeah, I felt like we went too far with that. Anyway.
You started it.
Vegas, Florida, Saturday. What's the hook? What's the draw? In case you're wondering, Vegas is, in fact, the betting favorite right after they booked their ticket yesterday. All the emails came out from the various sports books confirming that, yes, Vegas is going to be the betting favorite, despite the fact that the Florida Panthers haven't played hockey in a week and are well-rested. Or are they well-rusted? Anyway, what are the listeners saying in the Dunbar Lumber text line?
Listeners have a bunch of great text. Frankly, I was wondering if the listeners were going to be that engaged about this series. Frosty in Calgary, it's the Panthers phenomenon that has me wanting to watch the finals. The emergence of Matthew Tkachuk and the resurgence of goalie Bob. It's always fascinating when teams go on runs like this. We may dismiss them to some extent, but we shouldn't, as it really is special to see a team that is built to win actually dominate and win. Yeah, do any of us have this question in the backs of our minds, like, when's this all going to run out for Florida?
I think it's run out. I think this is the worst thing that could happen to them.
This being long break.
Being off the ice for a week and a half sucks. They were in a good rhythm. They were in a good routine. Everything was going their way. Every time they stepped on the ice over their last 12 games, except for one game, they won. Everything went their way. Bounces. Overtime winners. Tkachuk scoring big goals. Bobrovsky making big saves. No injuries. Everything was going their way. I feel like Vegas is probably going in saying, hey, we just played our best game of the playoffs not too long ago against Dallas. So I would be very concerned for that. By the way, I just want to... The collective, like, I know you're reading individual entries. The collective here right now, there's multiple ones. I didn't even think about this, but I guess it's something. People laughing at the fact that Eichel may win a Stanley Cup before McDavid.
That was the one I was going
to
read next.
Yeah, there's a few of them, actually. Like, five or six.
Mm-hmm.
That one really jumped out to me. I never thought that was a thing. I was probably between McDavid and Eichel, obviously, but... At the collective, like, fan base, like, I could care less who wins the Stanley Cup between the two of them first. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's neat that Eichel escaped the prison that is Buffalo.
I think that's the angle, right? I think it's one of those things where travel back just, 2 years and go, can you imagine Jack Eichel winning a Stanley Cup before Connor McDavid? Now, part of me is kind of like, yeah, I can, because McDavid plays for the Oilers. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the Oilers, to me, have never struck me as this team that's so well-constructed that they're bound to win it at some point. To me, they are McDavid and Draisaitl. Like, that's their strength. Now, I did wonder, obviously, this year, and I was talking this year, I was like, wow, I wonder if they're just so talented that they're going to win the cup this year. But I always wondered if they were enough of a team to actually get it done. Like, are they a detailed enough team defensively? Do they have the goaltending, et cetera? Like, and ultimately, the answer this year was no.
How about, and Gord on Twitter just sent this my way, Eichel and Reinhardt escaping prison that is Buffalo and advancing all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Good for those two. Yeah.
Reinhardt's one of the more underrated players in the league. He's a really good player.
He's another one of
those. He's kind of an afterthought, though.
He's another one of those guys that went to Florida
yeah.
and just fit seamlessly. There's lots of them, right? I mean, they're into half their blue line.
Mm-hmm.
Those cast-offs from other organizations that just found a way in Florida.
Teamster Mike texts in, I think having a brand new team win is kind of cool. The fact that 3 million Canadians live in Florida and the fact that Paul Maurice pretty much fired himself from the Jets is this close to a championship seems cool. Yeah, there will be a brand new team win. I think this is the first time since Washington and Vegas met a few years ago that both Stanley Cup finalists haven't won the Stanley Cup. Now, people have been reaching out to me on Twitter and asking me, is Florida part of the sad club? And the answer is no, not yet.
They're real close, though.
The baseline has been set at 40 years. You have to be in the same market without a Stanley Cup, and your franchise can never have won a Stanley Cup before. Mainly because I just don't want the Leafs in my club.
No, that's fair.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you're in the sad club. Like, Leafs fans, I mean, I don't think there hasn't been a fan base out there that has waited as long as the Leafs to win a Stanley Cup, right?
No.
1967, and then it's the Sabres and the Canucks 1970, and then you're, like, the Coyotes as an organization have been around for a while, but I don't have them in the sad club just because they bounced around from Winnipeg to Arizona.
Florida and San Jose are the two most promising prospects.
San Jose is very promising.
Let's say we ran it as like an actual biker gang with prospects. Right? Yeah. We'd be looking out there and we're like, who's promising? And we're like, oh, that guy's got a face tattoo. That would be Florida.
Yeah.
And then San Jose would come in and they got a bad attitude.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's got grills. I'm just happy to be here.
I'd be like, okay, those are our two best prospects, Florida. Yeah. And Florida right now, I mean, I don't know what the analogy continues on. Do they go to? They're in very dangerous territory. Leaving the gang, the gang life.
Florida's been around what, 30 years?
This is their 30th year of existence. Okay. 1993, they broke into the NHL.
Jay from Delta texts in. I really want to see Paul Maurice lift the cup. I just think he's an intriguing person. After him wanting out of Winnipeg, people looked oddly at that. And coming to a Florida team who didn't perform well during the regular season, he's held this group together, and I think he deserves it as much as the players do. Paul Maurice is a very intriguing figure. And I think the coaching staff in general is pretty intriguing, considering that Bruce Cassidy was fired by Boston because the veterans had had enough of him.
Yeah.
And then he comes to Vegas, and he brings his detailed approach. And some people would argue that it's too detailed, or he's, you know, kind of a maniac with the details. Seems to be working for Vegas pretty well, right? I mean, that's a pretty intriguing coaching matchup, Bruce Cassidy and Paul Maurice.
Mark, formerly from Yarrow, writes in, at this point in the playoffs, with my team is not in it, I cheer for the players, local boys. So he's mentioned, you know, Shea Theodore is from Aldergrove, if I'm not mistaken. So there's that, the Aiden Hill story. I'm more than happy to get behind that. That's a tremendous story, really, what he's done.
We share him with Alberta. He's not strictly a Comox.
No, he's a Comox guy through and through. We don't share anything with anybody, okay? If it's a local kid, good local kid. I mean, that's the hook right there for a handful of people, right? Sam Reinhardt as well, West Vancouver. So I think that there's something there. But I don't ever really get into that angle of it. Like, Andy's got it for Luongo, claiming him as your own as a local, and you're going to be rooting for him all the way from his executive suite. But
and I just like the Panthers.
But honestly, if I'm looking at this series, I hate saying this because I want a SAD Club member at the end of this to remain. Like, I don't really want Florida to win. I like.
Well,
the
they're
SAD
not in
club.
The SAD Club.
No, but if they win, it's out. They're done.
Right. We're worried about the demographics of the SAD Club growing forward.
You know, it's like the Legion. Like, you need young patrons to come in. You need the youths. You can't just rely on an aging fan base and an aging. Anyway,
the Sabres and the Canucks are responsible for a lot of dues now. Their dues went up because. The Capitals left, the Kings left, the Blues left.
Yeah. And
we got, we had to downgrade the clubhouse.
Yeah. I am kind of
it's
intrigued.
A closet now.
I'll be curious to I'll be curious to see more what a Stanley Cup does for Vegas than what it does for Florida.
No.
Just curious because.
I'd be so annoyed.
Hey,
if they
look,
won.
Vegas has way more at stake, wouldn't you say, in this?
Way more. Their owner, Bill Foley, I went back and looked, and he changed the timeline a few times, so I can't really say, wow, he knocked this out of the park, but. When they started, he said playoffs in 3 years, Stanley Cup in five.
And we all said, you are insane.
It's 2023 and they started in 2018.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And they're at their second Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he obviously had a lot of things go his way and a lot of luck broke his way. I also think he must have realized that the very advantageous expansion rules were going to fast track this thing for him. So it wasn't super outlandish to say.
How about this being an interesting angle of the Stanley Cup final? You got two teams that made the Stanley Cup final after making pretty bold moves, pretty bold trades, with the Florida Panthers trading away Huberto and Uyghur for Matthew Tkachuk, and the Vegas Golden Knights and their aggressiveness in the pursuit of Jack Eichel, and also their aggressiveness in the pursuit of Alex Pietrangelo.
Yeah, I mean, different scenarios as to how the guys got there.
But there's
although
aggression.
Both guys asked out of their respective markets. Like, Tkachuk said, trade me out of Calgary, and Eichel said, trade me out of Buffalo.
But Florida still had to. That wasn't like a slam dunk decision. It might look like that in hindsight, but they lost two pretty good players there, and they lost a guy in Jonathan Huberto who was coming off a terrific season. And yeah, there were concerns about re-signing both of those guys.
Yep.
And whether or not they wanted to commit to those guys at the age they are. And if you look at the contract that especially Huberto has in Calgary, now you're kind of like, yeah, I get it, right? Like, oh, is that going to be an anchor? But again, bringing it back to the Canucks, one of the things that I've had an issue with the Canucks is just the loyalty that they've shown some of these players. Like, the group has largely stayed together, like the core. When they finally traded Horvat this year, it was like, oh my, you know, it was such a difference. And frankly, for me, even though I didn't, you know, dislike Horvat, I thought it was refreshing because sometimes you got to mix up the group, just change things up. I mean, don't be afraid to do it.
If that's your thinking, then look at Vegas. There's not a team in the NHL that shook up its roster more over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Golden Misfits, who's left? Just that one line.
And traded away some good and popular players, too.
And a lot of draft capital. A lot. But every time that a big prize came on the market, they were right in the middle of it. Right? I mean, Max Pacioretty, Mark Stone, Jack Eichel. They were in on all these guys. They were hyper-aggressive. And I think that, I mean, the goaltending situation, the revolving door with Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Lehner, and now they're winning it with Aiden Hill.
Well, Lehner became available, and they had to go after him, right? It got him into this.
And hey, Vegas is taking a lot of heat for that philosophy and that approach. There's been a lack of loyalty. If we need to remember the Alan Walsh, the infamous artwork. I don't know how he managed to commission that so quickly with the DeBoer sword through.
Maybe
Fleury's
he did it
back.
Himself. He's very talented.
Yeah, and I remember thinking that there was going to be some backlash, either from agents or where it's like, you don't want to go to Vegas because Vegas has no loyalty to you. Remember when Nate Schmidt arrived here from Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
He was like, I just signed a long-term deal with Vegas. They traded me a year later.
But at least you know, things are going to work out in Vancouver.
Right. And then he's like, the only player in NHL history that openly accepted a trade to Winnipeg from Vancouver. He's like, I got to get out of Vancouver. But remember when Alex Pietrangelo came available?
Yeah.
What did Vegas do? Cleared the books so they could get him on board.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what they do. It's philosophically, it's interesting that you bring it up in the context of Vancouver because Vancouver has shown incredible loyalty to a group of players that has shown you nothing. Vegas has no loyalty to all these guys that showed them something.
Yeah.
They were all in there doing their best, winning lots of hockey games and making the playoffs.
Part of the loyalty with the Canucks is forced loyalty. Like, they just can't trade them because of the contracts that they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but there's an, I have a theory, by the way, that they don't like to trade the players because it's a hassle to remove their pictures from the side of the arena.
That is true. That is, those are big murals,
right?
Takes a lot of time and effort.
It takes
to get
a lot of time.
Down.
You gotta get the what do you call it? The cherry picker out.
Imagine that was actually in the discussion. Like, we got a great deal for this guy.
Yeah,
but the poster is so big.
The poster is so big, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Tear it down. You're right.
His picture is on 27 different buses. We are gonna need to keep him.
We
in
are
on
keeping
the team.
This guy. He's locked in. I want to talk a little bit more about our conversation about the Miami Heat and their culture, because we had a few texts on that, and this one's from Mike the Urologist from Brockville, who texts in and said, Heat culture started decades ago with Pat Riley at the top. They've fostered this culture for years with a clear, consistent direction. And Riley, as that consistent leader on top and a top-tier coach in Spoelstra in place for over a decade as well, you need consistency and alignment throughout the organization, which the Canucks haven't had since 2011. So the Canucks have a long way to go. Pat Riley is a fascinating personality in basketball. This is going to be his 19th time in the NBA Finals, either as a player, as a coach, or as an executive. This guy is a winner, and he is an intense, and I think in recent years, based on some of the things I've read, just the fact that this happens often, Pat Riley has mellowed a little bit, but he still expects intensity from his players, and he expects aggressiveness. And one of the things I really like about the Miami Heat is they make no bones about being like a nasty team and a mean team to play against.
Yeah. But that's,
they kind of remind me of the Raptors when the Raptors won, like that type of team. And Kyle Lowry was one of the pieces on that team. Like, you never, from that Raptors team when they won and Kawhi was so good as one of the great two-way players in the game, you knew you were always going to get an effort from that Raptors team, and they were never going to go like mentally weak on you.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's good. Do you have that? I just sent you some audio there, Greg. If you could pull it up, that would be fantastic. So when you talk about culture, you can talk about all the buzzwords and all the characteristics, right? That's great. That's what you want to embody. The players is a really important thing. Now, I know that doesn't sound like very good analysis, but work with me here. I've mentioned this a couple times, that Miami has 7 undrafted players on the roster. No team in NBA history since the modern draft era in 66-67 has had 7 undrafted players and gone to the finals with them. Here's Jimmy Butler talking about the role players and how they build into the culture, and how part of it, building that culture, is not calling them role players. Let's listen here. Jimmy Butler on the Heat's role players that aren't really role players.
I'm not going to say losing 3 in a row is part of the Heat culture that we like to talk about, because we don't play to lose. We don't want to lose. They're an incredible team over there, and they will be for a while. I just think, you know, the guys that Coach Spo and Coach Pat put together, when a guy goes down, the next guy could fill in that gap and do exactly what that guy that went down did, and do it at a high level. And then, you know, be humble enough to know that when that guy comes back, you got to take a step back and get back in your role. And nobody ever complains. They always do exactly what you ask of them to do, which is why you want to play with guys like that, which is why they're the reason that we win so many games. I don't call them role players. I call them teammates, because your role can change any given day, especially with how many games I've missed and, you know, in and out of lineup, off nights, whatever you call it. But we got some hoopers. We got some real deal basketball players that can score, can defend, can pass, and can win games for us.
There's a bit of breaking news in the NHL. Nothing too exciting, but the coaching carousel is starting to slow down here, and Elliot Friedman is reporting that the Washington Capitals are closing in on hiring Spencer Carberry as their next head coach. And this is a guy that we just spoke about with Frank Saravelli. Leafs assistant for a couple of years. A lot of teams were interested in this guy. I personally don't know too much about this guy. I know that he played professional hockey, not at the highest level.
Guess what?
What?
He's another BC boy.
Is he? Yeah, he's from Victoria, right?
He's from Victoria.
Right. He played in the ECHL and became a player coach in the ECHL,
You
think?
Know what? He's kind of similar to Mitch Love.
Okay.
Age-wise, where they played. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily playing style, but they were both guys that kind of topped out at being ECHL, AHL assassins. And then they moved into the coaching ranks. And they're both relatively young. Carberry's only 41. Carberry, as Frank reported, interviewed for that Boston job last year that eventually went to Jim Montgomery. Here's my question. I already galaxy brained this. You know who he should hire as his assistant coach in Washington? Sheldon Keefe.
Why?
Because he was Sheldon Keefe's assistant coach in Toronto.
That'd be funny.
Sheldon Keefe's going to get fired.
Now you're getting the coffee.
See? See?
The Capitals, I don't know what direction the Capitals are going to go. You know, they've still got OV.
I think I know.
And Kuznetsov and John Carlson under contract. I don't know what's going to happen with Backstrom. Is he going to retire? Like,
it's
very much up
in the air, right?
He just, this team looks like they need to rebuild, but at the same time, they've got Ovi chasing this goals record.
There's no rebuild. I mean, I remember talking to Wish.
Well, there
about,
might have to be a rebuild.
Not this year. I mean, there are precious few circumstances in which you can punt for a year or two on a rebuild.
I wonder if they trade Wilson.
I've heard that one out there.
Well, can you imagine the interest that they could generate in Tom Wilson?
There's three words that come to mind when I hear Tom Wilson's name right now, and it's Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah. Especially if they get a GM with bite.
Like, would there be any more shock to the system and culture change than putting Tom Wilson in that lineup? My biggest fear would be David Clarkson 2.0. That's what I would be scared of, because Wilson's not getting any younger, and there's a lot of miles on those tires.
Wilson's got a bit more of a track record than Clarkson did when he came over.
In what way?
Wilson's been a very good hockey player for a number of years.
Clarkson was a really good hockey player. He was at the end of his rope.
He had one really good offensive year at the end of his contract, but before that, he was a role player.
Wilson,
he was a
missed
grinder.
Half the season this
year.
Yeah,
Wilson's been injured a ton.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's no risk. I'm just saying he's a bit of a different case than Clarkson was.
Yeah, but I don't really want to bog this thing down. I just think that would be the one where, if you're looking for a team that needs a real fundamental shakeup, and you're looking at another team that needs to build, because the Washington Capitals are a now team. They're not thinking about the future.
Do you think when Shanahan said that he wants a GM with bite, it means, like, Frank kind of took a stab at it, and he was like, well, maybe he wants to build a team with more bite. And I was kind of like, I don't think that's it. I think he wants, like, a less touchy-feely GM. He wants a guy that's going to go in and bark at some people, right?
Maybe,
be like, I hate to use the phrase old school, but maybe a little more old school. Like just no,
no,
more,
no.
Like,
I don't think it's new school and old school. I'll tell you what I think it is. Is that the reports that have come out in the aftermath is that Dubas created an environment, especially for the core four, that was protective and kept the outside noise outside.
It was like where Andy lives, in like a cozy place. There were like blankets there, and everyone was wearing like the fuzzy slippers and a robe around.
A lot of throw pillows.
Yeah. You could get hot cocoa whenever you wanted.
Yeah. It was just a machine ready to go.
Now,
actually a butler.
If you wanted a cat to sit in your lap, there was a cat to sit in your lap.
We joked because you've developed this lifestyle. This was done intentionally.
Why do you say it like
this
that?
developed this lifestyle of comfort.
Yeah. But it was done
coziness.
It was done primarily.
How dare you makes me sick.
It was done
primarily. You should be miserable.
But that like was done. But you did it primarily because you like being cozy, right?
Who doesn't?
Well, but the Maple Leafs didn't do it to make their players cozy. They did it because they genuinely thought it was going to be advantageous to, in this pressure cooker of Toronto, to create the cone of safety and silence. Shanahan, I think at the end of the day, felt, I respect what you're doing. I understand why you're doing it. But iron sharpens iron. We're not going anywhere unless someone goes down there and holds the core for his feet to the fire. Dubas was like,
less holding of hands, more holding of feet to the fire.
Right. And I think part of Dubas was like, but we don't want the fire anywhere near our guys. It's hard enough being a professional hockey player in Toronto. I see both approaches, absolutely. But I know what's happening right now, and it's an age-old trend in the National Hockey League. You know, you go one direction, it doesn't work. You have to go a complete 180. I don't agree with it. I just think that that's how the league works. You bring in a player-friendly coach, and if that doesn't work, you bring in a hard ass. And then when that doesn't work, you bring in a player-friendly coach again. And it goes back and forth and back and forth like this. So what the Leafs are doing, it's not really like when he says, I want a general manager with bite, he wants Billy Beane going in the locker room and telling everyone, this is what losing sounds like.
Yeah.
And it's silence.
Right.
Right. That's probably what's going to happen is they're going to bring someone in who's going to be a little bit more of an ass kicker, for lack of a better phrase. Anyway, we got a lot more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Let's continue this conversation in the next segment with Jeff Merrick. He of the Jeff Merrick Show is going to join us next. We can talk about Spencer Carberry getting the job in Washington. If all these teams are going to cram in all their general manager and coaching hires in the next few days, because once the Stanley Cup starts on Saturday, no outside noise in the NHL allowed. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
The most comprehensive Canucks coverage in the city. Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
.733 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's Big Band Tuesday here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Hour two is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. The symmetry of programming on Sportsnet 650 this morning is off the charts. There's a real synergy here. It goes Halford and Brough. Then at 7:30, it goes Merrick. Then at 9 o'clock, after Halford and Brough come back for an hour and a half, it's Merrick again.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 11, it's Halford and Brough again. It was like we're running.
It's too much Halford and Brough.
It's like we're running a 4x1.
Actually, they cut you from the 11 o'clock.
Are you kidding me? We got cut?
Yeah.
For what? What do they put in our place? I need to know. Is it dead air?
Yeah, actually, yes.
The PDO cast.
I respect it.
The PDO cast at 11.
Ah, yeah. Okay. So we're back to the PDO cast. That's good. Anyway, let's go now to the phone lines. It's Jeff Merrick here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Jeff. How are you?
Just put Filipovich on for 4 hours.
I was going to say, it's like we are running a relay where you start the relay and somehow you also end the relay, but then Dimitri's in there somewhere as well. So it's good. It's good corporate symmetry here at Sportsnet. Hey, look, Jeff, with regards to the Stanley Cup final, we were talking about this in the previous segment. We threw it out to our listeners. The hook, the angle, what's going to draw you in for you now that it's set, Florida and Vegas. We will get a first-time winner of the Stanley Cup. What's the hook for Jeff Merrick going into the Stanley Cup final?
There's a few. I mean, it's the Eichel Redemption Tour. And, you know, one of the things that I was, you know, mentioning on our Toronto affiliate this morning was, if you thought that Connor McDavid had a burning desire to win and smash records this season, watch what happens if Jack Eichel wins the Stanley Cup before he does. So I think that's a nice little sidebar here. There's also, you know, Eichel versus Reinhart. And that's, you know, wonderful. You know, Bruce Cassidy redemption tour here after being shown the gate by the Boston Bruins unceremoniously last season. There's the Paul Maurice, you know, brought back out of retirement to win. But, you know, I'll tell you what, like the hook to me for the whole series is, and I love teams that are like this, you legitimately have two teams that can play any style of hockey that you want. Like, I think we have the potential to see a whole bunch of different types of games here. I think we have the potential for 7-6 games, for 2-1 games, for 1-0 games, for 3.5-hour games, if anyone decides to send a message. I think we have the potential for a really interesting 7 series here. And I will really be curious. And, you know, Ellie and I talked about this under the umbrella of, you know, where, you know, Matthew Tkachuk appearing on the NBA on TNT over the weekend. I know that we're looking at this and saying, oh, the ratings are going to be so terrible. And that might be true in Canada. That might be a reality in Canada here. But I'm really curious to see what the numbers are like stateside.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is really, when you look at, you know, the vision of Southern expansion, for the NHL, going back to when, you know, Gary Bettman took over in 1993 from Gil Stein, you know, this was, you know, part of the mandate, both from Gary Bettman and the Board of Governors as well. And that is, we need to create other hockey markets here. We can't just keep going back to the Northeast and Canada. We need to start to create hockey markets elsewhere. And now we have, you know, Nevada and Florida going at it for the biggest trophy in the entire NHL. So I'll be curious to see what the numbers are, because if they are anywhere remotely decent, then I think then that this is a complete boon here for the National Hockey League. I go into it, I know, expecting, you know, lower than average ratings considering the markets, but I'm really curious to see here just what the numbers are for this series.
Is it interesting or thought-provoking to you, as we head into the off-season for most NHL teams, that Florida and Vegas have both made major, major trades recently and now find themselves in the Stanley Cup Final?
So here's – I'm glad you got me here. So here's why I love this. Now, first of all, Vegas is not a draft and develop team because it's an expansion squad and they haven't had the years to – the draft and develop. So you understand that. But here's one of the reasons why I really love the presence of the Florida Panthers in all of this, because you love examples that validate what you've been barking about for years, right? So we've always been led to believe that the only way to be successful is through the drafting and through development. I've always maintained that there's a lot of different ways to be successful. Like, I think there's a lot of different ways you can play the game, coach the game, to be successful. I don't think there's one way to win hockey games. Just that I don't think that there's one very specific way, by way of roster construction, to be successful. And if you look at the Florida Panthers, sure there's Ekblad, sure there's Barkov, sure there's Anton Lundell, but after that, show me all the drafted and developed players. And the interesting thing about it is, I mean, a lot of it is, as you mentioned, blockbuster trades, and we think about Matthew Tkachuk, certainly. But isn't there sort of, and I don't know, maybe we're going to have to squint really hard to see this point, but work with me on this, boys.
We're working.
Is there not an expansion draft element to this Florida Panthers team? Now, work with me here. There's a lot of players.
I know where you're going.
A lot of players that are on this Florida Panthers team that bounced around from team to team to team. One, like in the case of Anthony DeClaire, was told by his former head coach, John Tortorella, he doesn't know how to play hockey. But whether it's Carter Verhaeghe, whether it's Brandon Montour, whether it's the aforementioned Anthony DeClaire, like go right down the list. Like, there's a lot of players. Gustav Forsling's another great example. There's a lot of players on this Florida Panthers team that kind of seem like they would have been players that were made available in an expansion draft, and they all ended up here on the Florida Panthers, and they all seem to have a spot, and they all seem to know what to do, and everything is meshing really, really well. And again, not a lot of it was done through drafting and development. Sure, there's Barkov. Sure, there's Anton Lundell, and sure, there's Aaron Ekblad. But after that, it's trades and waivers, like, signings. However Bill Zito could cobble together a team, he did, and they're successful in a season where we thought they would significantly take a step back before having the cap space to move forward next season. They've arrived. And to me, I look at Florida and I say, they're not just a team, they're a nice bunch of different teams, if you catch my drift. Does that make any sense to you guys at all?
Totally. Absolutely. Jeff, if you were the general manager of an NHL team, do you think you'd be a gunslinger that makes a lot of moves and hopes to capture lightning in a bottle. And if you do, maybe that offseason you got to make some more moves because you just want to keep shuffling the team and keep it fresh?
That's a great question. No one's ever asked me that. And the answer is probably yes, but I think we all say that. Where I don't know that, and this is just me knowing myself. And it's taken me a long time to admit a lot of things about myself. I don't know that I would have the proper discipline that you need to run an NHL team effectively because, yeah, my impulse would be gunsling.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if I were a baseball manager, I'd be giving pitchers the hook a lot quicker than they do. I'd be like Mike Keenan with pulling goaltenders, and I'd probably be like Cliff Fletcher trading guys as often as I could. What about you? Would you be like, to me, it's all because I'm too immature and not disciplined enough to have the patience to ride things out. What about you?
I think I'd be a gunslinger, but I think that's been widely influenced by the Vancouver Canucks of the last few years and the fact of how frustrating it's been that I'm sure Jim Rutherford and Patrick Galvin would like to make more changes, but they've got some bad contracts there. And they've kind of painted themselves into a corner, and it's become difficult with the flat cap, which has not helped, to make trades. One of the things that Halford and I are always talking about is, like, there are a bunch of Canucks that I think the organization has just been too loyal to. And you're just kind of like, well, there's been no success, so don't be afraid to switch things up, right? And, you know, I know a lot of people see the Tkachuk deal as kind of like a slam dunk decision for the Florida Panthers. And I get it, right? Like, they got a younger player in Matthew Tkachuk. There was risk in re-signing Huberto at his age. And there was risk in re-signing Mackenzie Weegar at that age. But it was still a risk to trade away a guy like Jonathan Huberto, who had had a terrific season and a top four defenseman in Mackenzie Weegar. And then you look at Vegas, and I know you've talked about this on your show, maybe a conversation with Wish, was that, like, we were all criticizing Vegas for not showing enough loyalty to the players. And what kind of culture can you build when you're not even loyal to your players? Well, yeah, it's kind of a cutthroat culture. And if there is a better player, then Vegas goes out and tries to sign that player, even if it costs them a good player.
You know what Vegas's problem was? I've thought a lot about this. Because, you know, it's funny, I had a conversation with Kelly McCrimmon about this when we had him on the podcast. And he said, like, and I think he brought up a really good point. He said, like, I don't know why you guys go on about this. This is what all general managers do. This is what all trades are about, just trying to make your team better. Now, I think we're optically, and again, if you're a manager, you don't worry about, oh, how is this going to look in the marketplace and how are we going to be perceived? I just think, like, quite bluntly, they traded nice guys that everybody liked. Like, everybody liked Nate Schmidt.
Yeah.
Everybody liked, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, they're guys that everybody loved. Like, they're the lovable guys, and always when you're a successful expansion team in your first season, like Vegas was, you tend to fall in love with those guys. And there's Marc-Andre Fleury, who's making all the saves, and he's like, you know, got like the best smile in the NHL, and he's charming as hell. And they move on from him because of what they felt was the more principled and sound hockey move. And I'm glad you brought up the Tkachuk deal because, man, oh man, has there been a lot of historical revisionism around this trade? Like, at the time, Brad Treliving was being, you know, credited as being a genius. Here's Huberto. He's getting Hart Trophy love. He's one of the most creative playmakers in the NHL. Plus, they get Mackenzie Weegar, a top four defenseman, thrown into this. Like, what a slam dunk, tape measure home run for Brad Treliving. Matthew Tkachuk had the Calgary Flames over a barrel. He takes a QO and walk after 1 year. I can't believe Brad Treliving turned it into this. And then Matthew Tkachuk had that season, and the Calgary Flames had that season, and everything turned around. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of things had to really fall in place for the Florida Panthers and the Calgary Flames there. One, you know, Matthew Tkachuk had to essentially indicate, like, look, I'm not signing here long term. It's time we move on, and here comes the marketplace of, you know, Florida and Carolina and St. Louis and interestingly enough, Vegas. And a couple of things for the Florida Panthers. You know, they both looked at their salary commitments and looked at two players specifically, Jonathan Huberto and Mackenzie Weegar, and said, we can't afford this. Like, we're not going to be able to afford these guys and keep everybody else around them. What can we do here? You know, what can we do here if we're going to move on? What can we do to sort of lessen the blow? So I think a lot of this was out of necessity for the Florida Panthers, because it wasn't as if, you know, they hadn't, you know, entertained the thought about moving Huberto and Weegar before. I mean, heck, go back to the draft. I mean, on the floor, you know, the Ottawa Senators make the move for Alex DeBrincat, and all we kept hearing about from everybody, and I even made a joke with Pierre Dorion about it. He kind of gave me a smirky, one of those like, hey, hang on, let's see what happens by the end of the day smile. We all thought that that the Ottawa Senators were getting Mackenzie Weegar. And he was headed to Ottawa, and Pierre Dorion was going to be, you know, the king of the draft, picking up the Brinkett and finishing off with Mackenzie Weegar. So a lot of things had to really fall in place here for that one to happen, because I know there's a whole lot of, well, what Team X needs to do now is go out and get their Matthew Tkachuk. And if they have to trade one of their superstars or two of their superstars, then you do it, because it worked in this situation. Well, first of all, there's only a handful of Matthew Tkachuks. You know, there's only a couple, and generally teams don't let go of them. And the Calgary Flames let go of Matthew Tkachuk kicking and screaming. You know, this is not something that they wanted to do. Brad Treliving was able to make the best of a bad possible situation. Here's one for you, though. I was thinking about this and talk about this on the show later on today. I've always made the joke that Barkov is finished for Bergeron.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part of that now, as I think more about this, if Barkov is finished for Bergeron, is Tkachuk American for Marchand? Is that what we're seeing? I know they play on different lines, but is that what we're seeing here with the Florida Panthers? This is Bergeron and Marchand.
Tkachuk's
a little bit.
Tkachuk's the guy best suited the platform to be the next Marchand, for sure. Right, I mean, I think it's such a hard role to pull off, because you need you need the agitator part of it, but you also need incredible offensive upside. You can't just be a good offensive player. You have to have elite offensive upside. And
do you see Tkachuk as more a power forward, though, as opposed to Marchand?
Stylistically, they're probably not the same, yeah. Right? Because, I mean, Tkachuk's just bigger, plain and simple. But
Marchand might be a better two-way player. I mean, he's a terrific penalty killer.
Right, but I get what you're saying. Like, just in terms of the role, I can see it for sure.
Yeah, I don't know, just things you noodle around and try to make a Stanley Cup final interesting. That's what I've come up with. That's the bit of genius that your boy Jeffy here has come up with. Don't be too impressed.
Was it the LA Kings you were comparing, or the Florida yeah. Panthers to the LA Kings? I don't know if you brought this up. Was Matthew Tkachuk your Jeff Carter?
No, Matthew.
He should have been.
Who did I have Tkachuk as? No, I don't think it was Jeff Carter. Hang on. It was Mike Richards as Sam Bennett.
Okay.
It was Carter Verhaeghe was Justin Williams. That's because he was scoring all those game-winning goals. Montour was Doughty. Bobrovsky was Quick. Matthew Tkachuk was Dustin Brown.
Ah.
Oh,
yes.
See, I think it should have been Jeff Carter, because Jeff Carter pouted his way out of Columbus. And went to LA, and Matthew Tkachuk pouted his way out of Calgary. Do you remember how pouty Jeff Carter was in Columbus?
They couldn't find him.
That was hilarious.
Remember when he vanished?
Yeah.
I was like, where's Jeff Carter? And I was like, it doesn't matter who you talk to. Like, you can talk to the play-by-play guy, you can talk to the general. Where's Jeff Carter? We don't know.
Yeah.
Remember Carter? I forgot about that. That's right. He totally vanished. Like, no way. I'm not going to Columbus. That's a good one. Okay, I'll still stick with Dustin Brown.
Okay,
I'll warm to Carter a little bit. Okay.
One final question, and we only got a couple minutes, but I do want to get your thoughts on this. What does Brendan Shanahan mean when he says he wants a GM with bite?
He wants a GM that's not afraid to make big moves. He wants a GM that's going to, I think, and listen, I don't think that Dubas was adverse to making big moves either. And I think a lot of, like, right now, there's a whole bunch of mudslinging going on right now, as you can imagine, as both you know, people that are loyal to Shanahan take shots at Dubas behind the scenes and vice versa. So eventually we're going to sort of figure out, you know, what exactly happened here in the past couple of seasons with the Maple Leafs. But I think he wants someone that comes in and isn't afraid to make moves, isn't afraid to, I don't want to say make the team tougher, because I think Dubas went a certain way to address that. But I think more so he wants someone to come in who has the experience of making large moves and not shy about making big decisions. And I know we're all circling back to Brad Treliving on a lot of this, who had the Johnny Gaudreau experience, learned from it, had the Matthew Tkachuk experience, learned from it, and that's a major move as well. So I think that when he says we want someone with bite, I think he wants someone that has experience making bad moves, both from a positive and maybe gotten burned by it perspective, and wants some harder skin because of it. Like when you go through, I mean, Craig Conroy talked about this at his presser. You know, that was Johnny Gaudreau was a real tough one for everybody there. And, you know, Conroy, you know, the new GM of the Flames, so like, we can't let that happen here. And that won't happen again. And I can't imagine that Brad Treliving, having gone through that with Johnny Gaudreau and his agent, Louis Gross, doesn't come out of it with tougher skin. So I think that's probably what Shanahan was after. He wants someone with the experience and someone who has enough braveness that they would go out and swing for the fences on a deal, regardless of what the number and nameplate say.
Jeff, thanks a lot for doing this today, man. We really appreciate you taking the time. Have a good show today.
Barkov is finished for Bergeron, and Tkachuk is American for Marchand. Go with me, boys. Have a good one.
I like it, buddy. Thanks. Right. We appreciate it. Jeff Merrick here.
See
on
you,
the
Jeff.
In the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. So I was while we were talking about player movement and two teams in the National Hockey League in the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. Largely defined, reinvigorated, framed by two huge trades. The Eichel trade, although yes, Vegas has done other ones as well. I get that, especially Mark Stone. And the Tkachuk trade. I mean, it just reinforces my thought that more player movement is better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are now more player movement than
what we've got right now.
And I'm not talking about like third line wingers signing for $2 million in free agency. That's not important. It's irrelevant. Think about this. In the NBA Finals, two of the final four teams featured two of the best players of this generation, Jimmy Butler and LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James is playing for his third different franchise. And he's played for four iterations because he played for Cleveland twice.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler's on his fourth different franchise. Like, you want that kind of, you have to not be afraid to let great players go. Never mind good ones. I mean, that's when we look back at the Bo Horvat era, we're like, wow, we waited a long time for that one to pay off. Right? And yes, being a captain and being a role model and being part of the community, those things all matter. But I look at Vegas and you can love or hate the approach that they've taken. When it comes to loyalty, yeah, we signed a guy to a 5-year contract extension. Yeah, we traded him a year later. But it's not at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
There should be one objective. And it's not to make friends. And it's not to be pillars of the community. It's to win. And sometimes winning and being nice run counter to one another. But it's a business. And if your sole objective is to get better mm-hmm. with everything that you do, then you have to look at player movement in the same way.
Shake it up. If it's not working,
shake it up, right? You don't need to be married to every single player that you have. And in another note, this blew me away while we were talking America as I looked it up. If you had to guess right now, everyone in the room, dogs, you can play along as well. How many active 8-year contracts are there in the NHL right now? I say this because the NHL is the only league where you can sign a guy to an 8-year deal. I mean, I guess you could do it in other sports.
So it doesn't need to have 8 years left on it. It's just like
active 8-year contracts in the NHL, which is like almost a debt. You're signing a guy for almost a decade. If you had to guess, how many active 8-year contracts are in the NHL right now?
10.
What do you say?
Six.
Are you kidding me?
How many are there?
81.
What?
There's 81 eight-year contracts in the NHL right now that are active. Now these include
that was my second guess.
These include like Brent Seabrook's contract, which is still technically active. Yeah, yeah. But
so you're fudging the numbers.
I didn't think that through enough.
Well, there's not. Hey, I'll tell you this.
I was like, there shouldn't be 81.
there are way more active like guys that are actually playing on them than the Carey Price and mm-hmm. There's only really three like. Defunct ones. Carey Price, Shea Weber, and Brent Seabrook. Like, they're not playing hockey again. Bo Horvat, Nathan MacKinnon, Barkov, Dreisaitl, Ekblad, Point, Travis Sanheim.
Yeah.
David, like, why would you sign Travis Sanheim for 8 years?
Why would you sign Horvat for 8 years?
Why?
Why?
There's all of them. I mean, go through the list.
Yeah.
It is kind of crazy when you think about some of the... And I get why. It's because NHL teams, and if you listen to these prospects guys, they just get so enamored with... the guys they bring into their organization, and they think that the time and effort and money and resources that goes into player development means it's too scary to move on for a kid. We put this much time and effort into it.
I think there's two excuses for signing those long-term contracts. One, if you can get a guy that you really are sure about out of his entry-level contract. So you're going to lock up all his prime years. So you're going to lock him up till he's like 31 or something along those lines, right? Mm-hmm. The other one would be, if you're really just going for it, right? Like the Pittsburgh Penguins to me, if I'm running the Pittsburgh Penguins, I'm not too worried about adding a guy on a long contract, even if he's getting a little bit older, if the cap hit works. Because you know that you're in it right now. You got Crosby, you got Malkin, you got Letang.
Mm-hmm.
Just go for it. And that's why we were always talking about like JT Miller – great player, makes way more sense in an organization like Pittsburgh than he does in Vancouver because the Canucks aren't close to winning a Stanley Cup.
You know what the issue
right
is
now.
And what you always make fun of the Canucks for is you're just kicking the can down the road. You're leaving problems for the next guy.
Well, GMs are famous GMs are famous for doing that.
Here's another question.
When Lou Lamoriello signed Horvat to that contract, do you think he was like, well, I won't have to clean that up?
Could anyone tell me right now who owns the Brent Seabrook and Shea Weber contracts off the top of their head? Who owns a Brent Seabrook contract?
Arizona?
Nope. Who owns a Brent Seabrook contract? Nope.
Vancouver Giants?
Nope. Tampa Bay Lightning?
Okay.
Who owns the Shea Weber contract?
Vegas?
No. Arizona Coyotes.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's not a good situation when those just get changed hands at the end for cap relief for people. That's the byproduct of 8-year contracts. Anyway, we're way over for time. You're listening to the Halford and Bref Show on Sportsnet 650.